Welcome to today's deep dive. You know, we live in a world that's totally obsessed with thinness and efficiency. Look at modern smartphones just shaving off millimeters every single year.
Well, yeah, completely. Every millimeter counts.
Right. And the automotive world is on that exact same trajectory with all these new engines demanding ultra-thin, hyper-efficient 0W20 motor oil.
Right. It's all about efficiency now.
But looking at this stack of technical specs and articles we have, there is a very stubborn holdout. 10W40 synthetic motor oil. It's basically a thick, heavy oil in a skiddy oil world.
Yeah, it really stands out on the shelf.
So our mission for you today is to decode why this specific grade still thrives in an automotive landscape that is, frankly, engineered completely against it.
Well, a quick glance at the certification labels on these bottles actually reveals a pretty major anomaly right off the bat. You'll never see the ILSAC Starburst symbol on a 10W40 bottle.
The Starburst symbol. That's the main industry badge of honor for fuel economy, right?
Exactly. ILSAC sets the gold standard for fuel economy ratings in passenger cars.
Okay, so it's missing the main badge. Is 10W40 just like the underperforming student failing the modern standardized test?
I mean, no, it isn't failing the test. It literally is the rubric.
Wait, really? The rubric?
Yeah. In the EPA's fuel economy testing framework, 10W40 serves as the literal baseline reference oil. So to earn that energy-conserving starburst, a thinner oil has to beat 10W40's fuel economy by at least 2.6% when fresh.
Oh, wow. Okay, but wait, if 10W40 is the baseline, why are we even testing thinner oils against it? Like, why not just create a new modern baseline?
Because testing against a fixed historical constant allows engineers to quantify exactly how much fuel economy is gained strictly through lowering the oil viscosity.
Oh, I get it. So by design, 10W40 cannot mathematically outperform itself.
Right, exactly. So it's structurally excluded from these modern efficiency labels. It basically sits completely outside the fuel economy framework.
So since we know it isn't built to win fuel economy awards, it has to be doing something else incredibly well to justify shelf space. Who is this thick oil actually built for?
Well, the common thread for 10W40 is gap filling and extreme heat tolerance. For starters, think about high mileage engines. Once they cross that 75,000 mile mark, internal wear naturally widens the clearances between moving parts.
And so a thicker 40 weight oil essentially acts as a dynamic seal.
Precisely. It plugs those wider gaps, preventing oil from slipping past piston rings and reducing blow-by.
Right, which also perfectly explains the second use case in the sources, you know, vintage European classic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like the air-cooled pre-996 Porsches or older BMWs. Those engines were engineered decades before 20-weight oils even existed.
Right. They were manufactured from day one with the looser internal clearances.
So they actually require that thicker fluid cushion.
Exactly. And then you add the extreme heat factor, which brings us to high-revving motorcycles.
Oh, right. Bikes are a totally different beast.
Yeah. Many bikes use a shared oil bath, where the engine, transmission, and wet clutch all rely on the same fluid, operating at continuous temperatures hitting, like, 160 degrees Celsius.
Wow, that is incredibly hot. So thinner oils just shear and drink down under that stress, right?
Right. Under that combined mechanical and thermal stress, thin oil doesn't stand a chance.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit, because knowing you need gap filling or high heat protection isn't quite enough when you're just standing in the automotive aisle. The marketing on these bottles is incredibly misleading.
Oh, it really is.
Like, just because a bottle says synthetic doesn't actually mean it's full synthetic, right?
Exactly. The chemical distinction is massive at the molecular level. A product like Castrol GTX High Mileage, for example, is just a synthetic blend.
And that usually runs, what, $4 to $6 a quart?
Yeah, around there. It relies heavily on conventional, unrefined mineral oil-based stocks with totally irregular, mismatched molecule sizes. They mix in just enough synthetic oil and seal-swelling additives to legally run the label.
Wow. Whereas something like Mobil 1 High Mileage, pushing up to $9 a quart, is a true full synthetic.
Right. Every molecule in the base oil is engineered in a lab to be perfectly uniform in size and shape.
And that's why it actively resists breaking down and can actually handle a 10,000-mile drain interval.
Yeah, uniform molecules mean way less internal friction and better thermal stability.
Okay, well, speaking of friction, here's where it gets really interesting. Pouring standard car spec 10W40 into that high-revving motorcycle we just talked about is a catastrophic mistake, isn't it?
Oh, it's a huge mistake.
Because modern car oils are loaded with all these friction modifiers. They want to make the oil as slippery as possible to squeeze out better fuel economy for the engine.
Yeah, which is completely lethal to a shared motorcycle system. A motorcycle's wet clutch relies on very specific friction thresholds to transfer power to the transmission.
So if you introduce automotive friction modifiers, the clutch plates will just wildly slip under high torque.
Exactly. This is exactly why motorcycle oils must carry a JSO MA or MA2 rating.
JSO being the Japanese Automotive Standards Organization.
Right. That stamp certifies the oil is specifically formulated without those slick friction modifiers. Brands like Motul 7100 have this MA2 rating, but standard car oils just do not. It keeps wet clutches safe.
So the big takeaway for you here is that 10W40 is a highly specialized tool.
Yeah, it's not just some outdated liquid.
Right. It's the heavy lifter for aging engines with wider clearances, vintage classics, and wet clutch bikes. It is absolutely not a universal upgrade you dump into a modern engine hoping for extra protection.
Right. And based on these specs, you'd really only need to pivot to a 5W40 if your local mornings regularly dip below sub-zero temperatures.
Using the right tool for the job really requires understanding the engineering constraints behind the tool.
It really does. It all comes back to the testing frameworks.
Which brings us right back to that EPA standardized test. Next time you're shopping, I want you to think about this. How many other everyday products are unfairly dismissed as outdated simply because our modern testing frameworks weren't built to measure their true specialized purpose?